Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted small business podcast host. I'm here with Sherry Langbert of Babblebox, and she's going to introduce not just Babblebox, but herself, and tell us why we should trust her as a marketing expert.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you. So where have you been in the world, and what makes you qualified to talk about marketing?
Literally, where have I been in the world?
Sure.
I've been to a lot of places because during COVID, I discovered that I had racked up a lot of points prior to COVID and thereafter. And so we travel everywhere. So we have been to Japan and to, I don't know, everywhere, London, England, you name it, France, South Africa, Cape Town. Yeah, we've been to a lot of places. It's my son's now little, like, because everywhere we go is on points. So it's fun. And why should you trust Babblebox? Well, I would say that I'm a female founder. And if you know any of the stats on female founders, there's very few of them. I'm also bootstrapped. I didn't raise any money. So as you start to look at stats and go narrower and narrower, I'm a Canadian, which living in the States, so that should just get me trust right away. So there are three things: bootstrap, female founder, Canadian. So those are some of the reasons that I think. I think when you bootstrap a company and it's your own sweat and every penny I make goes back into the business, I'm very sensitive to other small businesses because I did this myself. And I also, you know, and to any business. So I think those are three reasons.
Your perfect customer, exactly who you know needs your product and service, walks into the elevator, the doors close, and they're like, "Hi, what is it what you would say you do here, Sherry?"
We are an influencer marketing agency that specializes because we have solutions for everyone, not just the big brands. And so we've kind of productized influencer marketing for any kind of business. So it's, you know, people think it's beauty and cosmetics and maybe food, and but we do every single type of industry. So I think that we specialize in unique productization solutions for our clients.
One generation ago, the term influencer didn't exist. How would you define it today?
I think that it is someone who is great, and there's two ways to look at it, but someone who is great on social media today. I'm not going to talk about the past. I think that it is someone who's creative and has a niche, and they talk about their niche in a way that no one else talks about it, and they are skilled at creating content that either resonates with people in the form of educating them or selling to them. And the format could be different, right? We're seeing a huge uptick now with Substack, but it's just someone who's really prolific in the content that they share based on their expertise and industry and share it in different formats.
In the 90s, you know, we saw a lot of celebrity crossovers. Is this just the next evolution of that celebrity promo slot, but more selective?
I think that there's a lot of ways to look at it. I think celebrity promos existed for a long time, right? I can remember my cereal when I was in the 70s growing up. There was Athletes on the Box, right? Or Farrah Fawcett or Heather Locklear was in like a Fabergé commercial on TV. So I think that the difference here now is the crossover is that with celebrities, it's a finite group, right? Very few make it to that mega celebrity level. But I think with this, it's humans. And so I think it's endless. And I think the categories are endless, right? When you look at the celebrity endorsements from the 70s, 80s, 90s, maybe, you know, the famous people were like athletes, Hollywood, maybe, you know, musicians. But here, it's like a celebrity could be anyone. It could be a kid who becomes famous for, you know, doing toy unboxing videos. There's your, so it's, you know, it could be the person who drives. I just interviewed someone who does jump rope routines, right? That's your new celebrity. So it's endless. And I think it depends on the industry.
It seems like it's human powered marketing. Is that the cure for the wave of AI slop that we've seen unleashed as marketers have gotten their hands on the overly scalable tools of AI?
I think, you know, from my perspective, I get a lot of people writing and calling me saying, oh, influencers are going to go away because of AI. And to your question, I think that what we're seeing is the opposite. You still need the human. And yes, I agree that you could certainly create AI people, but at the end of the day, isn't that just an ad unit? Right? If it's a fake person. So the big thing about influencers is that they are human. They interact, they emote, they have relationships, hopefully, with their audiences. They could go to events if you're a brand that has events. So I think it's different.
How do you think that small businesses that are providing local services should consider influencers as an option? Let's say you got a brand, you know, backyard resort pools. And what's your creative process for thinking through how to connect them to an influencer that's going to be worth the ROI?
I think the small local brands have the biggest opportunity. I think the first hurdle that they have to get through is the fear and the panic. Like, not every influencer charges $1 million to work with them. There are many people who, just like a small brand, small influencer, right? You don't have to go with the biggest first. Definitely making sure it's the right fit. But also, you brought up something great. There's different types of influencers. And some people, it's awareness and top of the funnel, and it's not going to move a sale. And some people, it is going to move a sale. Finding which one, and I know for small businesses, the sale matters most. I don't know if every influencer moves products. So asking them if you could see, selling a pool is a lot harder than selling mascara, right? So, you know, seeing if they have any trackable data on sales, if that is your primary metric. But just from the get-go, not being afraid that, you know, you could reach out to influencers on your own. You certainly in the beginning do not need to work with an agency, and understanding that at the local level, there's lots of opportunities.
Do you have like a internal CRM of influencers, like, that you've just like built relationships with, and you just, you know, type in, you know, your niche and see who pops up that might be aligned? Or is there other magic that goes into it? Are you on behalf of somebody kind of researching and finding influencers and trying to see if they're available to work?
Yeah. So, combination, right? So back in the day in 2013 or 14, I launched one of the first SaaS platforms on the market that was one of those repositories, but more, it helps you manage the campaigns, and we use that internally. I think that the way to look at it now is the universe is your CRM. Anyone could go onto TikTok or Instagram. If I'm in South Orange, New Jersey, and I need a cooking influencer who talks, you know, who's a teacher, you could probably find someone in proximity just by Googling and doing the little searching or using AI or whatever it is. I think there's a lot of different tools out there, but what I think, and the reason we turned our SaaS platform into more the agency model, is because I think that it is very hands-on. At the end of the day, it's humans dealing with humans. So just working within these systems becomes very, very hard. It's not just, you know, finding the influencers. It's creating briefs. It's sending them messaging. And so making sure that the creative is right. You know, it depends how picky your brand is, right? You could certainly deploy, oh, we're going to send a tile to 200 influencers. We're going to pre-make a tile that every influencer just shares a tile with a BOGO code for this restaurant in my town. Great. Easy. You could use a platform for that, much easier. But when you're talking about video that is more creative, then I think you need the humans involved too. And there's a lot that goes into it that people think, oh, a system's going to just truncate that, but there's humans behind the scenes doing a lot.
I remember there was a speaker at MozCon, an SEO conference in Seattle, and she was talking about how they hired, you know, a dozen influencers to promote these pink pants. The problem was that the e-commerce site wasn't ready and they ran out of pink pants in the first 10 minutes. And so Google delisted their e-commerce listing and popped up their competitors because they were out of stock. And so they did this huge multi, you know, $1 million campaign to push these particular pink pants, and that a lot of them sold, but not by that cut, or they lost a huge cut of it because they realized they're out of stock. Oh, what's happening? Where's our sales? And then they had to add them. And so they lost a portion of that revenue. What are some of the lessons you've learned to get businesses ready on their side versus, you know, to leverage influencer campaigns appropriately?
I think the first thing is really realizing your criteria and understanding what your criteria are. I mean, the inventory isn't obvious. I think if you're adding, you know, a lot of brands do it to get ratings and reviews. And there's a lot of nuances with ratings and reviews. A lot of brands do it to, you know, making sure that the geos are correct. One of the big things we see is sending influencers into stores, and the influencers will run it. Like the brand says, oh, it's available in these 10 stores in this geo. And the influencers are writing and going from place to place to place. And if it's happening to the influencer, it's happening to the consumer. So understanding where your inventory is based, understand, you know, there's a lot of different things depending on what you're looking to do. Making sure that all of your landing pages are correct, making sure that if you're running a promo, the teams are talking to each other. A lot of times what we see is like the influencers, similar to what you're saying, but the influencers are here talking about this and there's a discount, and then consumers go somewhere else and there's no discount, or there's a new product rollout here and the influencers are talking about something else. So really making sure that everything is consistent and any groups that need to be talking to each other are talking to each other to make sure it's all cohesive.
That makes sense. I'm curious, as a founder, what's that journey been like for you? Is it something you'd recommend for everybody on the entrepreneurship side, or are there certain types of people that just aren't really meant to run their own business?
I think it takes a certain kind of person. So I think, you know, if you're the person, especially if when you're starting out and you're at home, maybe because you don't have an office yet, and you're the person who turns on the TV or gets distracted easily, not for you. You got to put in the hours. And I think if you're immediate gratification type of person, you, especially with what's going on with this culture of social media and influencers and our younger generations, think that everyone goes to sleep, starts a business. And with the AI, like I listen to these podcasts and in one weekend I launched a brand and I did it with AI. Those are like the one in a million. Like it's still a business and it still takes a lot of years. And those first years were brutal. I mean, they're hard. I loved it, but they were brutal. And there were many times I was like, oh, this is never going to work. This is never going to work. Because we've been doing influencer before and it was even called influencer. So people in the beginning laughed at us. And so I don't think it's that easy. And I think that there's the people are making it sound just so easy. It's easier than it used to be, right? To launch a business with all these tools that we have, but you're still starting from scratch.
I would imagine working a lot with social media and influencers, Is there a real generation gap in how these systems work and how entrepreneurship works, you know, Gen Alpha versus millennials versus boomers, and understanding, you know, the social media phenomena?
Definitely think that there is, but if you grew up in it or you follow it, then you know the new things that are happening, right? I think if you're adjacent, like you're launching a product and you really need to surround yourself with different types of experts. You know, even someone who might be, you know, there's so many new things that happen every day. And like even now, like the cultural signals that the younger generation is able to tap into and they see in these trends is different than the generation above it. So I think surrounding yourself with the right and having different people that have different perspectives contribute to what you need to do.
What's the thought process or logic that you use to help guide or select the channel? Because, you know, I think there's usually a pretty big difference between, you know, a TikTok influencer and somebody who might be popular on YouTube or have a large Instagram following for one reason or another.
A lot of brands, believe it or not, come to us and say, this is what we want, right? I mean, for whatever reason, they might not even, when we work with government, a lot of them aren't even allowed on TikTok yet.
Right.
Maybe they never will. So, you know what I mean? So a lot of them say, we need it to be on these channels. And then in the cases where companies come to us and or brands come to us and say, what do you recommend? A lot of times to share to multiple channels. But to specifically answer your questions, it really depends. I see a lot of people chasing where everyone else is going. Just because everyone's on TikTok or Instagram doesn't mean that's where your audience lives. So really understanding like where your audience and also the format of the content, right? I feel like YouTube is can be, not the shorts, but can be great for instructional or longer format video or more complex videos. We do that a lot with like camera companies, battery companies, technology, but it doesn't just have to live in those verticals, you know what I mean? And I think that Instagram, I think that TikTok speaks to a different demo, mm-hmm. is what many people think, but there are other people on there that it speaks to. It's just faster moving and hook based. And then I think Instagram is much more reliable and that sweet spot for a lot of brands that are looking for, you know, combination of educational, inspirational. So I think it really depends. And I think you, to me, the biggest thing is understanding where your audience is and maybe testing where other audiences or other channels in different ways to see if you could tap into new consumer audiences.
It occurs to me to ask, are there channels that most people wouldn't think of that there's influencers on? Because it's easy to say, oh, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube, and that's influencers. But are there other channels or ways to think of influencers elsewhere or other channels that could go into that?
Of course. I mean, I think you could think of any of the podcast platforms. You could think of Amazon. They have all these new programs that no one even knows about. There's Amazon reviewers. You could launch an Amazon reviewer campaign. You know, there's Pinterest. There's Twitch. There's LinkedIn, right? If you're a brand that wants subject matter experts, more B2B maybe, or even not, there's LinkedIn. So I think that's the thing is like, we hear about a channel, we hear everyone, you know, the big news about one brand doing so well here. Find your lane or try to go where no one else might be.
Is there like a sign up process that you guys use that an influencer on any of these platforms would come to you to then get hooked up on the other side with people who are looking for them?
So we work with the brands. And then influencers come to our site, sign up all the time. Does that mean we work with every single influencer? No. But we kind of work brand facing first, figure out what we need. And then we go into our internal systems or write in our newsletter or reach out to new influencers. So typically, if an influencer wants to reach out to us, they come to our website and reach out.
Got it. What's something that's really surprised you about marketing in the past year, either for yourself or on any of your campaigns that you've worked on?
Something that has surprised me. It surprises me that there's certain categories that no one really thinks about. It surprises me that every marketer looks at the same tent poles and doesn't go beyond those tent poles. Like, why? It's, you know, like, and I go back to my days in the weight loss industry, right? And there's like, oh, we need to do a promo on, you know, this date or this date and this date. And I sat there and I said, What about the day after Halloween when every single person just ate so much chocolate and candy? How come no one's doing it? Like, no one does it because there's these tentpoles and November 1st is not, it's already holiday, so no one's on a diet. Why not try it? Or we did a campaign. There was a company that was selling golf tickets and they just said, our ticket buyers are men. It's men. No, it was men. And we said, why don't you try women? And they were like, holy cow, women buy golf tickets. Who knew? Same thing. There was an optical company and it was like, no, women are our audience. Women are our audience. I'm like, okay. So I think it just, that's what surprises me then and it surprises me now. Yeah.
Have you done a lot of these podcast interviews?
On and off. Why?
I'm just curious if there's a question that you wanted to be asked that nobody's ever asked you on a podcast interview.
How do agencies work together, right? You're an agency. I'm an agency owner. I just got an ad for a company. You know, there's a lot of these networking communities where you pay and they introduce you to other people. And as agencies, how do we work together better? And, you know, we stay in our lane. We only do influencer. And I feel like there's a protectiveness between agencies and why can't agencies work better together? Like if you do this and I do this, like, I think, yeah.
I agree. I think there's a lot of like potential for, you know, you to either work hand in glove explicitly, implicitly, like, or to expand your profit project offering, you know, with a partner agency. You know, certainly it's something I'm encouraging a lot of the SEOs that I talk to and getting encouraged as we kind of step back from the moment where we were, you know, so hyper-focused on our small little niche of like keyword research and make blog, keyword research, and technical SEO. And we made tons of great money, but that time is a little bit over. You know, we're facing kind of a digital revolution as ChatGPT, Perplexity, you know, Claude all start to compete in Google's monopoly space and make new opportunities. And so we have to be a lot more open to growing organic, being part of the picture, because like I talked about, you know, doing the influencer campaign, but the website wasn't ready because they didn't think through what was going to happen if they ran out of pants, you know, from an SEO perspective and ranking, because, you know, on TikTok is necessarily, you can't have hard URLs there, you know, so people are Googling to find the pants that so-and-so wore. So we have to turn our attention to folks like you that have access to another channel. We have to be willing to partner with the email folk and get better acquainted with the PPC campaigns that are going on. And, you know, we have to be much less standalone.
Yeah. And like banding together, I think that's the one thing that it's like, why don't agencies come together more?
Yeah. Why don't you? as a small business owner, is this a lifestyle business or are you hoping to grow it to a point and sell it? Or are you going out feet first?
So it's funny. I heard, I listened to a bunch of podcasts and one of them said, why do people not like the word lifestyle business? And it's because it makes it sound like typically it's a woman sitting in her house, you know, sewing something. I don't know. My grandmother was a seamstress, so no offense to sewers, but he said, I love a lifestyle business. They're awesome. This has afforded me a great lifestyle, but not just me. There's 20 of us and we don't answer to anyone. And that is a great dream to have. Right? We had an RFP the other day and the woman on the other end of the RFP was like, you could tell she was just going to make our lives miserable. And one of the gentlemen from my team was so upset and I'm not naming names, right? And I said, you don't need to be upset because we don't need this in our life. And that is the beauty of like a lifestyle business. Like we all are happy we love what we do. We do great work. And I don't have to have someone screaming and yelling at me and making my team's life miserable. So ideally, would I want this to be, you know, I believe this could be 10, 20 times bigger, but I will not compromise my team's happiness or my integrity to do it. And that's why it's self-funded. And that's why I didn't go down any crazy, you know, venues to take this to the next level.
You're on the road, you're traveling. What are some of the things that you use to stay connected to a remote distributed team, build a culture, and, you know, establish values and keep them consistent when, you know, it's not the 90s anymore. You don't come into an office every day in a suit and tie, and, you know, not everybody signs an employee workbook necessarily, but it's something I've been exploring.
We were long time users of Skype forever. We loved Skype, and then it went out of business. I don't know, they turned it off. So now we're on Slack, and we are on Slack all day. And we, I think one of the most, we've had like those internal systems where they come in and they do a whatever 360 on your team. And one of the things that it said was how incredible for a remote business, how connected we are. I will attribute that, and maybe it's the size, right? We're not a big company, but we have a team meeting every Monday, Wednesday, Friday to make sure everyone is connected. We have different channels in our Slack. So I don't think that's so unique, but it could also be that we were virtual before most people were virtual. So we've been doing this for a long time.
So just familiarity and, you know, not having the CEO pressure of return to office. We got to pay for this. We're paying for this space. We need you here. And we're going to make any excuse possible to make that work.
Listen, you have to have trust in your team, right? There are people that I know that use software that tracks, that monitors the desktop of employees. I'm not going to do that. I am going to know if you're at Disneyland and you tell me that you're at your desk, because it's like what I say to my son. I have eyes and ears in both parts of my... You know, it just becomes obvious, not even to me, to the team. Like, you could tell if someone's, so I think that there has to be that trust. I will never stick, I shouldn't say never, my husband's an attorney, but I don't think I will ever put software to monitor how hard people are working on their desktop. So I think it goes both ways. And I think the trust comes from my employees, from my team too, because they know that, you know, it's both ways.
What do you think about your most unreliable employee who is doing customer support for you, but you don't actually pay them? And that's ChatGPT.
How do I get away with not paying an employee?
I know, right? I've got a customer support person running around and telling people all about my business or not. How are you? From the marketing side of things, handling the rise of this new channel, AI?
I think it's amazing, but I fear that our brains are going to stop working. It's like every single email, it's like we're all putting them in, correct this, make this better, look better, you know, taking away those M dashes. I think it's great. I do think that it could cause, there's so much that it gives you, and then your head is going in 10 different directions, and it's almost too much that you lose focus. Mm. And that to me is a big problem, because you go in all these different directions and you have to remember, like, wait, this is what we need to accomplish. So I think they're the basic things that these tools can do, right? Monitor my email and remind me. But it starts to become a snowball when you have an idea or a campaign launch or something big, and then it starts, and you go down that path times 10. So I fear that.
What are you excited about for your company in the next 6 months?
Think we're seeing the physical, And I think that for me, because we don't just do influencer, right? We do a lot of the tangible, physical. People come to us for boxes and kits and merch for influencers as part of these. Yeah. And with AI that we've talked about so much, we're seeing the trend that people want physical. They want mail in the mailbox. Kids are saying, what is, like, we're doing some like mailbox moments. They want to go back to events. And when I talk about events, I'm not talking about, what is that thing where people go in the forest at 60 years old? Oh, like Burning Man. I'm not talking about these massive, crazy things. I'm just talking like the physical and the connection, I think, excites me. So I think that that's big. I think physical is like with everything that's new, it's kind of also coming back to how do you stay grounded? And I think people are craving, and brands are craving, consumers are craving community.
I absolutely agree. I see it on the SEO side. Like, there's so much untapped potential. You know, every event, you know, a small community has 20 little self-promo event sites, like Hip Cookville. Like, I'm in Cookville, Tennessee. So there's, you know, 3 or 4 websites per city to promote local events, because at the end of the day, like, as much as we stare at our phones, I think a lot of us want to put those phones down and go do something. Final question. I'm just curious if there's any research, any data, any case studies or white label reports that you've put out recently, where you want to direct people to learn about influencer marketing or take away any lessons and get connected with you.
I do feel that we do have them, but they come from our team. So you could, you know, reach out to team@Babblebox, because they go to our newsletter list of partners. So if anyone wants to reach out to team@Babblebox, we do have different case studies, particularly on AI with influencers and trends that we're seeing, like merch report, trend reports on how that's working. But just reach out to team@Babblebox, or just go to the Babblebox website, which is Babblebox with 2 X's, or you could find me on LinkedIn, which is Sherry Langbert, and I'm on LinkedIn.
Well, thanks for stopping by. And to my listeners, her links are going to be in the show notes. And if you want to read more about this particular episode and see details, we'll be going up on unscriptedsmallbusiness.com. Got a whole library there of other experts, founders, owners, small business owners of every type and variety available for your perusal. Thanks for listening, everybody.